Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Well, well, well. For once, the gods of press conferences have aligned. First hour, Michael Harrison is here, 4 o'clock. Governor's press conference, 5 o'clock. President's press conference. You're one of the VIPs, Michael Harrison. Hi there.
Hi, I can't believe it. Listen to the lineup. Us, the governor, and the president.
Yes, it goes straight downhill from here.
Now, is that in alphabetical order, or is that in order of importance? I'm not sure.
It's just in order of choice, but it worked out well. So how have you been holding up under the stress of isolation?
I'm holding up fine. I'm holding up fine. You know, I'm worried about the things I see, but I'm not an anxious person, so I'm doing okay. But I do see that there's a lot of anxiety starting to build. And people who tend to be anxious, you know how everybody has their nature, and you try to, some people walk a narrow line, some people walk a wider line before they fall off. Some people have a higher tolerance. People who tend to walk what I call a narrow line, people that are easily rattled or are worry warts or tend to have anxiety over normal things, whatever normal is, I find that they're starting to freak out a little bit. And I encourage everybody listening to this, I absolutely encourage everybody within the sound of our voices, don't freak out. Don't let your demons get the best of you. Remain cheerful.
But wait a sec. There's two parts to what you're saying. One is that everybody's engine revs at a kind of a predetermined level.
And
that means if it's worry, if they tend to worry, then they're worrying like crazy when there's actually something to worry about, it, instead of when there isn't anything and they have to go searching. But still, these are tough times because everybody is confined in some way. And you don't get to do your normal activities, and you don't get to tap into the pulse of daily life the way we're used to through commerce, through going to the coffee shop, the pizza place, hanging out at the grocery store with friends, going for a walk at the mall. Whatever it is you're used to doing, it's generally done around commerce in our society. And without commerce, what do?
Well, we practice the religion of capitalism. I mean, you're absolutely right. We are consumers. We are consumed with consuming. The idea of buying things and engaging in things that involve cash transactions is totally what we're about. In many ways, we worship the almighty buck. All right, I understand that. But you're making an amazing point that the ability to go shopping has not, it's not within our easy grasp right now. Online shopping doesn't have quite that same tactile feel to it, but I bet a lot of people are doing that right now.
Oh, yeah. No, there's something fun. I've ordered a bunch of stuff because it's just nice when the box pops up and you get to see what it is because you forget what you ordered. And there's kind of a gratification in that process. Mm. It's also magical. It makes you feel like you have some power because all you have to do is order and you click a button and the order is sent. And a couple of days later, there's your package. It's so empowering.
Yeah, it's a great way to run up a credit card debt. It's a great way to get into debt. because you don't feel that you're spending the money. It's so easy. You know, oh, I like that. I think I'll buy that new motorcycle. People are buying cars online, you know. You know, buy a car online. Buy a new house online. You don't have to go and see it. You don't want to sit in a stuffy car with some realtor and get sick. Well, you know, just press a button, give them your credit card, and you'll be all set.
Well, that makes me think that really Amazon is the luckiest company. Like, they're the ones who are positioned, because who knows if we'll go to stores again the same way we have, or how long it will take if that's going to be normalized.
No, we're not going to be the same. Look, I hope that the changes are positive, that we have better technology, that we avoid a lot of useless effort like commuting when we don't have to, suffering the indignity of being in pools. I don't mean swimming pools. I mean like cubicle farms and places where, you know, it's a lot more dignified to work from home and you can get more done. So I hope that we have that. But I'm nervous about our civil liberties. I get very nervous when governments are able to grab power based on martial law, based on, tragedies or disasters, dangers, all of that type of thing. This is going on right around us, and I'm not advocating that people run around and defy the police and go out. No, I'm all for isolating, but we got to keep in mind just how extraordinary this is in terms of what a lesson we're learning and how our lives could be turned upside down by something that we have no control over. And then we suddenly, you know, we beg for somebody to come and take control, strong leadership.
Yes.
Bail us out. All of that. You follow what I'm saying? We've got to keep our wits about us through this whole thing.
But I don't know if people ever had their wits on that stuff. You know, there is a desire to be protected and an expectation that that's what government is there for. After all, why do we give it all our money? Why do we let it run up huge debts? We assume a lot of people have this good-natured assumption that if the government is doing it, they're doing it for our best interest and they're doing it well, both of which are false in my opinion, but a lot of people believe that, and it's tough to dislodge that from that point of view. And if you look at polls right now, When people are polled about whether they're willing to have a clampdown from government, they're in favor.
Yes, they are. And I'm not as anti-government or as knee-jerk anti-government as you are. However, I totally respect and understand why you are and realize there's a lot of validity to it. So right now, you and I are both on the same side of that particular line. In better times, I might be a little bit more liberal about it than you. But no, I completely agree with you that this is a situation that we should enter this arrangement with government reluctantly. We should cooperate because it is necessary at the moment, or at least I believe it is. I know there are going to be investigations that go on for years after this as to what the hell really happened. But right now, for the sake of, you know, the discussion, as far as we know what's going on, yeah, we should be cooperative. But I'm not so thrilled about it at all from a standpoint of political science and human nature. Let's back up for a second to people having cabin fever and anxiety.
Okay.
I'm sitting looking out. I'm holed up at a place I have. I'm down in Florida at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking across the street. There's another building. A woman comes running out of the building, screaming into her cell phone, "Send the police, please send the police. I'm in trouble. My husband is out of control. My husband spit on me." And they're I know it sounds funny, doesn't it? It's terrible. It's tragic, but it sounds funny. And then again, tragedy and comedy are very closely related. "My husband spit on me. Please send the police." And she's pacing up and back in the parking lot. And within a couple of minutes, cop car comes up. Police pull over. They ask her what's going on. I can't hear exactly everything. And they obviously settled the problem. There was no SWAT team or anything. I said, "Oh my gosh, there's gonna be a SWAT team here in a minute. There'll be a, you know, an incident." But
did they take the husband away?
I didn't hang around long enough to watch. I didn't want to be conspicuous. So I just let it go, and then it was all cleared up. So I really don't know what the resolution was, other than nothing terrible obviously happened. But isn't that wild, Todd? My husband spit on me. I'm in trouble. Get the cops.
Well, I think maybe that's indicative of the stress that people are under having to be confined together. But the other thing I was thinking about was that he was viewing his spit as a weapon against
her
because she was nervous about the virus. So those two things combined.
Well, one is either an erupting act of domestic violence. The spitting obviously is connected to people's fear of spit. And maybe he was just teasing her and kidding her, and she could be somebody who's so anxiety-ridden that it pushed her over the edge. Somewhere in there, I think it is a reasonable assumption to attribute this to the coronavirus and the isolating, to the cabin fever, and to the fact that relationships between parents and children, between siblings, between husbands, wives, or domestic partners are being tested. We all have our space. People don't want to be in each other's faces constantly.
Yeah, we're not used to these kinds of patterns. We're used to having more freedom and more autonomy, and to be able to go out and do our normal routines with or without each other. It's really funny. So Rosalie's been getting more concerned each week, and as a result, each week my behavior has to be altered to meet her level of anxiety. And ultimately, I think she's right that she's on the edge of the curve, but she has to teach me. So this week, you know, last week it was, you can't go to the big grocery stores anymore. Go to the little local ones because there's way less people and they're cleaner. Okay, we'll do that. You know, it doubles the cost of groceries, but so what? That's a reasonable price. And this week it's, you have to wear a mask when you go to the store. So today for the first time, she gave me a mask and gloves to go to the store with. And I'm sitting there in the parking lot putting them on. I feel like such a freak. But the funny thing was, I put on the mask and then I start to pull on the first glove and I look around me to see if anybody's watching because I feel like I'm about to rob the place.
Well,
it just is so weird to be putting a mask and gloves on. I feel like a bad guy.
Well, masks, remember, we're just coming out of the age of terrorism. You know, if you walk into a bank or you walk into a store wearing a mask, you know, you go to the airport wearing a mask, you're going to be immediately, circled as a suspect for some type of terrorist act or some type of crime. Now you're a criminal if you're not wearing a mask. I don't want to put ideas.
Those seem like the old days now, though, don't they?
The old days were like a month ago. Yeah, what happened to immigration reform? What happened to build the wall? What happened to climate change? Mm-hmm. What happened to race relations? What happened to
all
those control?
Urgent things? No, I don't think anyone's been called a racist in a couple of weeks, at least. It's amazing.
You know, really?
All right, Michael Harrison is here. Let's grab a quick break. We'll continue the conversation on WTIC.
Hey, I ought to leave the young thing alone, but ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
It's WTIC. Michael Harrison's hour every week, first hour. And we appreciate it, Michael.
I appreciate being invited on and getting to play in your sandbox.
So jobs are naturally shrinking. It's kind of funny, actually, to me, how the media reports it as all these record numbers and shocking unemployment numbers in terms of weekly, the largest weekly. Last week was the largest weekly at 3.3. This week at 6 million or whatever it was the biggest ever. And those things seem totally predictable and normal to me, given that this is the first time the economy's been shut down by the command and the constant urging, daily urging of both state and federal governments.
Yeah, this I was thinking during the break. That's what I wanted to talk about. You read my mind, or certainly it's the next logical thing to discuss. In terms of anxiety, the thing that's bothering me the most, beyond just people that I know and people I don't know worried about their health, which is, I guess, the primary thing, but what's going to happen to the country? What's going to happen to the economy? What's going to happen to businesses that are closing and are not going to be able to open again? What's going to happen when people can't pay their mortgages or their jobs? So many Americans live from paycheck to paycheck and, or two paychecks away from the sheriff. Now, obviously, a lot of people are not going to pay bills, and there's going to be a lot of forgiving of that. And there is a big relief package that has its complications. But the stopping of the economy is like stopping oxygen in a living being. it doesn't always get revived the way you would hope it would. And there are different theories that it's going to bounce right back, or that it'll go into a deep, dark depression or somewhere in between.
But all that depends on how long this takes, and yes. We just don't know. But it looks, as days go by, months get added to the expected time this is going to take. So if it takes, for example, till the end of summer to even begin to crawl out from under this, and then there's a second wave, which is expected in the fall, then where does that leave us come the first of next year?
Yeah, it's a pretty dark and dismal scenario. There's no question about it. And the answer to dealing with it emotionally is we'll take one day at a time, but it's hard not to worry. It really is. I don't know. There's nothing funny about it. It's terribly, terribly serious. And I'm torn between being on a bully pulpit like this and spreading fear. I don't want to do that. On the other hand, you don't want to be a laughing fool. You know, hey, let's have fun. I don't know. The fact is, this is unprecedented. And I'm very concerned. I think that they should make some type of rule where it's against the law to spend any kind of money, except for vittles, you know, for the things that you need the most, food, medicine, mm-hmm. whatever. And
well, they've done that effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can't, there's nowhere to shop. So
no, I'm saying rent and mortgages and everything should just be, that's it. You can't buy another house right now, but you don't have to pay your rent, and your landlord or your bank, they don't have to pay their bills. I know that sounds silly, and it's not thought out. It's half baked. I'm saying it more as a theoretical concept. That
you mean a wish? You wish that we could shut off that system and give ourselves a
break.
Pass for 6 months or something.
Exactly.
But is there any way to do that? I mean, the piper has to be paid, doesn't it?
Probably not. Probably not. I'm not smart enough to be able to come up with the answer. I'm only comforted by the fact that nobody else is either. You know, I don't feel that dumb because I realize that the people that are running things are not that much brighter than I am. In some cases they are, in some cases they're not, but there's nobody really driving this bus, and that's the part of it that
well, it's too big of a bus for anyone to control, right?
Yeah, it's terrifying. But again, I don't want to preach terror.
Not preaching terror. It's just being analytical. Everybody's thinking about these issues. Everybody's wondering where we end up. Let's grab a phone call, and maybe it'll give us a new direction. Tom and Avon, hi.
A new direction. How can we have 701,000 jobs lost with 10,000 people looking for unemployment? That's a 93% discrepancy.
I'll tell you, without having all the answers to your question right now, you are bringing up something in a broad strokes that's interesting. A lot of the numbers don't add up.
Well, they sure don't.
Well, but every interview you hear on television, anyway, with somebody who's talking about trying to get employment benefits, they've been trying for 2 weeks and they can't get anyone to pick up. They can't. All they get is a busy signal. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be this lag where people are out of work, but they haven't been able to act on their need for unemployment benefits yet. Does that make sense?
I don't know what else to say to the caller other than there are a lot of things that don't make sense. And that's why I said at the end of all of this, there's going to be an investigation. There's going to be, hell to pay because there are so many things that are just wrong. And there are so many aspects of this. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I don't buy everything that I hear on face value. I just don't. But I don't know.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, certainly we can see from just what we've been hearing about the virus itself, the advice we've been getting from experts, the information we've been getting, a lot of it through the weeks has been speculative and has proven to be wrong over time because they're winging it.
Mm. Now, on the other hand, I'm hearing from reliable sources that there are all of these drugs that are very hopeful and some are working. Somebody that I know, finally, you know, remember we asked, do I know anybody who has it? I said, no. Well, now I know people that have it. And some of them are.
All right. Well, hang on. Fill us in after we get our bottom of the hour news, because that's interesting. It's Friday. Michael Harrison is here. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us on WTIC. perfect
People
COVID
say
song.
We got it made. Don't they know we're so afraid? Isolation.
That's life these days, Michael Harrison.
How did he know?
It was only like 45 years ago he wrote that.
Yeah,
song.
Right.
He
right,
nailed
yeah.
it.
Yeah, he got it. He got it right. He sure did. He got a lot of things right, actually. But I guess time tells all. So I was telling
you.
Well,
eventually everything comes around.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. What's how does it go? What's old is new again. And,
yes.
Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And all of those kinds of cyclical gems of wisdom. So I was telling you before the break that one of the things that I'm finding interesting in the world of what do we know and what do we don't know, or what don't we know, you're hearing about all these drugs that are supposedly working. You hear a lot about hydroxychloroquine and Z-Pax and all kinds of things that are used to fight malaria or lupus. And there are stories of them working, and I'm finding more and more of these stories as I do my own research from legitimate doctors around the world. And then you hear other people say, well, it's not proven, it's not true. Somebody I know.
Well, there have been
just
other studies, too, conflicting studies with some of those things. So there are anecdotes of people recovering. And I heard about a study today with that drug I think you were just mentioning, the hydroxychloroquine, and where they said it it did reduce by a small amount the time of recovery or something like that, but maybe it knocked a day off it or something like that. It wasn't.
Well,
I've heard
more drastic anecdotal evidence. I mean, it's somebody that I know, and again, I'm not going to say names or whatever, but it's written about in the newspaper. Was on the verge of death. Was heading for a ventilator. Looked like he was. He took out his will and said goodbye to his wife. And the doctor said, "I'm going to try one of these remedies." And it turned it around, like quickly.
Yep, I've heard those stories too.
Yeah. So now I'm not advocating that. I am presenting this completely as a person who is ignorant of the truth, but seeking it. And I don't know exactly what to believe. Well, isn't that what we are? Aren't we seeking truth?
Yeah.
But we have to acknowledge that we're ignorant.
No, it makes perfect sense that these antiviral drugs that have already been approved for use in humans, they've gone through all the testing, could be discovered whether they actually have some efficacy with regard to this particular virus. And then we'd be off and running. If we could have something that would make having the disease for somebody older and vulnerable or sick and vulnerable easier to get through and increase survival rates, that would be a huge thing.
Right, right. So, but this brings it back to the original conversation we were having, that we don't know what lies beyond what we know. We get all our information from television. I mean, that seems to be the driving source of common knowledge, whether it's Fox News, CNN, or MSNBC, and then it breaks off into other things. But that seems to be the places where the ratings are going through the roof and where the town hall of conventional wisdom and conversation is taking place in America. Would you agree that that's largely true?
I would think radio plays a big role in that. I feel like our audience has grown and the people are very, you know, there's a lot of people who are sitting around just listening to us all day.
I didn't mean
I
didn't mean that to diminish radio at all. But it just seems that the
feeling sensitive about it. I just feel that there is, we do have that role in the media, however the configuration breaks down. What's the point you wanted to make?
The point I'm making is that these operations are drumming fear and playing it up and have the statistics on the Chiron, you know, how many more people died this last 5 minutes and all of this. It's a skewed input. It's dramatic. It's got music. It's got graphics.
Yeah.
It's that this is
sound
where
effects.
Yeah, sound effects. This is where most of America is getting their stuff. And there are news junkies who, the combination of not going to work, sitting at home, They're just taking this 24 hours a day. They're sleeping with it on. And
I totally live with this, Michael, so it's good you're saying it, because Rosalie is glued to ABC or CNN all the time, and they do generate fear as a way to hold you to the screen. It's just like sugar in food that makes you want to go back for another bite, or salt in food. They're putting that stuff into television news in a way to provide easy addiction.
Yes, they are exploiting this. That's what they're
absolutely
doing. And so that troubles me, because I know too much about the media to, I'm going to the very source. It's like drinking out of a stream that you know is polluted, but that's the only water there is, you know, and it's troubling. That's all I could say. It's troubling.
Well, it's really disappointing that because we used to have a pretty vibrant media. And even though I think there's always a cost to having narrow pipelines, gateways, where there are gatekeepers in big corporations, you know, we used to have three media outlets, national media outlets on television. And we had, we still have a handful of newspapers or news organizations that drive what the stories are. And that's a really problematic thing. But now we've gotten to where anybody can make something into news, and therefore news isn't necessarily newsworthy anymore.
Mm-hmm. And there is still this kind of fascination for social media as being hip, like in the middle of a major conversation. Okay, Twitter is talking. We have a question or a comment from somebody, blah, 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 out there. And who cares what somebody in Oshkosh on Twitter thinks in the middle of a conversation with experts? That's crap.
Well, it's just a way to keep a feedback, to create a feedback loop, and to be able to pander to the audience.
It's a way to create false credibility.
To things that aren't true, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Michael, we've got a caller with a question for you. Let's get Joe in New Hampshire in. Hi, Joe. You're on with Michael Harrison.
Hi, Todd. Hello, Mr. Harrison.
Hello.
Spoke with you last year. Hey, I called Todd a little over a week ago. I ran this by him about what's going on now. I think the most devastating thing that's going to come out of this, once the virus is, you know, done with in 2, 3, 4 months, whatever, is the trillions and trillions of dollars that are being poured in to combat the problem. In the near term, Nancy Pelosi has another $6 trillion. Donald Trump is another $2 to $4 trillion. So all these trillions of dollars going in, it's inevitable we have massive inflation like we've never seen before. And it's going to be a reset of the U.S. dollar. Greece did that in 2012. They devalued their dollar 50%, closed the banks for a few days. And they came out of it. Europe was saved a lot of euro dollars.
So what do you want from Michael on this, Joe? Go ahead and ask him a question.
I want to too. What the state of the dollar in massive inflation later this year, next year, whatever, because I see it's inevitable, and that's going to be really the devastating thing to our society once we're...
All right, Joe, thank you for that. Michael, thought on what happens?
Well,
Is this one of those things you study?
It's not one of the things I study, but it's certainly something that I'm aware of. And again, I'm smart enough to know that I don't have all the answers to that. And I've yet to see an expert that has all the answers. Most of the economists can tell you why something's happened, but most of them cannot tell you what's going to happen tomorrow.
So, I don't even hear anyone really raising a red flag and yelling and screaming about the idea that there is huge debt being dived into by Democrats, Republicans alike. They're so excited to be able to exponentially expand the government.
This goes back to what I said at the beginning of our program, and that is that there's going to be hell to pay for the abuse of the principles that we live by in the name of saving lives. And I'm all for saving lives. I'm not saying we shouldn't. What I'm saying is, though, keep your wits about you, because there are things happening right now that are way beyond the realm of a healthy economy and a healthy government and a healthy society. We're spending money, we're doing things that, and we're taking power. We're having a government tell us we can't go out of our houses. We're locked in our houses, which might be the thing to do. But we're giving power to people that ultimately you can be sure, the one thing I'm sure of is it ultimately will be abused if we don't get that power back as quickly as possible when it's no longer needed. I mean,
well,
we're still in the Patriot Act, you know?
Yes, from 20 years ago. I don't think we'll ever get out of this. That's my concern. So first is the overspending, the huge influx of new money being spent from, where do they get it? From nowhere. They just pull it out of thin air. It's made up money. And they spend trillions of dollars to protect us, and no one is sitting there talking about what the other side of the ledger is. What is the danger of spending this money just on a fiscal matter? And then, second to the economics of it, is the governmental power. And it seems to me we're losers on both sides of that.
Yes, we're between a rock and a hard place, to use a cliche. Every aspect of this thing is choosing one ill versus another. Nothing good's going to come out of this other than maybe we'll get past it and then we'll pick up the pieces. I'm talking about damage control. That's what I'm talking about. Damage.
Yeah, but
control.
What kind of pieces are we talking about? Is it going to be like little shards of glass that can't be put back together?
The pieces are going to be the human spirit, the fact that people will be raring to go, that there may be a new rise in entrepreneurism, that people will be creative, that new medicines, new technology, just as World War II created many, many breakthroughs in technology, the Cold War created the space race, and if it wasn't for the Cold War, we wouldn't have Tang today. So it's not totally bleak as long as we keep our wits about us, talk about these things, and try to present truth in media, and when we don't know it's true, say it's speculation. Say I don't know. That's all. I don't think it'll be shards of glass that are unworkable. I think we're going to have problems on our hands, but I do believe in the human spirit. I do believe in the American, the general American way and the American public. And I think that we will rise and probably come out of it eventually with some type of a renaissance. It's what do we do between now and then? Because we have families to feed. We have houses to maintain. We have roofs to keep over our heads. And that's now. And that's what I'm talking about.
And the question to me is always the case. Are we being sold a bill of goods in order that the politicians can ingratiate themselves with us and protect themselves in upcoming elections so they do better? So it seems to me Donald Trump is using this as an opportunity to pump money into the economy and ingratiate himself into the minds and hearts of the American public so he can win re-election. And it seems to me the state governors are not looking at to provide any leadership themselves. They're turning their heads to Washington and saying, hey, guys, where's the stuff? Send the stuff. And the stuff is being sent, and the stuff is being sent for the purpose of propping up those state governments so everybody thinks everything is normal. And that's putting us more trillions of dollars into debt. So when you're going into a crisis, it's nice to be in good shape going into the crisis. If you're going to need to run several miles at high speed, it's good if you've been working out. If you're a couch potato and then you suddenly get to that moment, well, that's a problem. We are the biggest couch potato in the history of mankind, this country is, with the amount of money we have made and the opportunities we've had and those opportunities that have been squandered. So we're all deeply in debt, and now we're coming into a situation where we need to have money in the bank and we don't have it.
Well, that's interesting. I think that's kind of an interesting description. We are the biggest couch potato in the history of mankind. Fortunately, not everybody is in debt. A lot of people are frugal. A lot of people have nest eggs.
No, but the country is. The country is itself. The federal government is going from 23 to probably 26, 27, 28 trillion dollars in debt. State of Connecticut is effectively bankrupt, and they're scared to death in Hartford trying to figure out what's going to happen financially. Michael Harrison is here. Quick break. More talk coming up. WTIC.
Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you.
Mike is giving us music.
The Bill Withers with a message. Festival.
And a virus festival as well.
I know.
This is a message from politicians. My shoulder is strong enough to carry you. Let me carry you.
Well, so You want to switch gears to something more pleasant about the coronavirus, like the change in our culture and words? And are you wearing your day pajamas or your night pajamas?
Oh, I don't do pajamas.
Oh, no, you're not in your radio thong, are you?
No, even if I am. So I'm broadcasting from home, as you are.
Yeah.
And but I still get I still get up and act like I'm going to work. I shower and shave and get dressed, and because I want to feel that transition into the day. I want to feel the energy of work through the rituals that I have associated with it. So I don't lay around all day in my jammies, as some people do. Do you?
Sometimes.
Sorry if that was too personal. I was just going with the flow. But what did you want to say about all this?
Well, I want to confess that today I was really bad and I didn't put on my daytime pajamas. I'm really falling apart. Yeah, yeah.
So you're in a t-shirt and sweatpants, right?
Oh,
now?
I'm a sweatshirt kind of person. I mean, there are pictures of me. I look very distinguished, but underneath that distinguished look is a total, absolute slob. And this gives me a great opportunity to find new dimensions to my slobbery. Like, we're all going to find out.
Congratulations. Will you send us pictures, please?
No. Yeah, right. Hey, go to my website and see me as everything becomes a clickbait. I'm kidding a little bit. I hope people understand I'm more in sync with Todd, trying to keep myself together. But we do, being home and working from home, start to slide a little bit in terms of getting dressed, in terms of shaving, in terms of haircuts. Salons are not a place to go. We're all going to, if this goes on for a few months, a lot of people are going to be showing their roots, you know? And
well, they've been, that's a good one, showing their roots.
They're going to be showing their roots. And, you know, my hair is starting to get a little, not that it's that thick, but my hair is becoming pretty unruly. And I'm starting to wonder, like, what the hell? You know, should I try it myself? There are going to be a lot of bad haircuts out there in another couple of weeks.
But they're closed up here. There's nothing we can do. Are you in Florida?
I'm in Florida right now. And
it's much more casual there.
Everything is closed. Everything is shut down. The state is there. You can't get a haircut. I mean, you know, some of the restaurants are open, but basically to take out. No, it's dead as a doornail. The beaches in Florida, all the way around that long peninsula, they're closed.
Mm-hmm. They're closed. You can't walk the beach.
You cannot.
This I don't get. This is insane. Why can't you walk the beach?
I don't know. I guess it's
gonna
a reaction
it from a seagull?
To. Well, I mean, there's, I guess the fear is that the sand might contain, you know, sweat. I don't know.
No, it's that there might be a crowd hanging out at the beach. Where is there a crowd? I would love to see a crowd.
There's no crowds on the beaches in Florida because there's so many beaches. People don't understand it. It's not like on Long Island there's Jones Beach or,
yes,
you know,
it's
you
constant.
Go to a... Yeah, where you go to a place, it's just endless beach, so you're never in a crowd. But what confuses people are the news shots that we saw of the Fort Lauderdale spring break situation, where large groups of teenagers and millennials and college kids gather and get sick. But that's not the norm. The parks in Florida are basically empty because there are so many of them. So it's crazy not letting people go out and take a walk. But they're walking along, you know, A1A, which is the road that goes right along the beach. You can walk on the sidewalk by the beach. There are people with beach chairs on the sidewalk. You have to walk around them, the fools, looking at the ocean through the bushes that are between the sidewalk and the actual sand. There's so many things that don't make any sense, Todd.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest one, that you can't go to a park and take a walk. And this idea of confining people, this last bit that's happening right now, I think might be a mistake. All right, that's it for our time, Michael Harrison, Talkers Magazine. Go to talkers.com, see what Michael does. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay well.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.